And I'm Norman Gilliland. Welcome to the Midday for a Tuesday. The University Opera with the UW Opera Orchestra will be performing Benjamin Britten's comic chamber opera Albert Herring, October 24th, 26th, 28th in Music Hall. And let's see, today's already the 21st, so it's coming soon. And the director for the event is David Ronas. The assistant conductor is Kyle Knox, or graduate assistant conductor, I should say. And the opera, being written in English in the first place, not surprisingly, will be sung in English. Welcome to the Midday.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Now, you know, Albert Herring is this, I guess it was considered rather strange at the very beginning. Sort of a quirky representation of the music of Benjamin Britten back in 1947, but it has steadily gained its adherence since then. What do you suppose was the thinking that said, this is not the sort of thing we usually do here? Any ideas?
The thinking by the English public?
By the producers, even. The Glenbourne Festival, I think it was.
They said,
we don't usually do this kind of thing here, but I'm just kind of wondering what makes it so different, if you have a sense of that, or has it become so mainstream by now that it's hard to say?
It's funny. Perhaps the fact that it's comedy. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much opera, 20th century opera, is comic. Hmm. Is a true comedy.
It's a rare thing for the era.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's exceptional.
We have comedy in Baroque period. We have Mozart. A little bit of early Romantic comedy.
I mean, Candide is comic to a great extent.
Yeah. Candide is a different animal, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's crossover. It's
you know. All kinds of things. Well, so how would you characterize Albert Herring then?
As a comedy, I mean, uh-huh. I mean,
and chamber opera. What makes a chamber opera?
Yeah, there are only 12 instrumentalists who play, 13 characters. It arose out of the English opera group was formed right after the war.
Mm-hmm.
The post-war situation in England at that time was. I wouldn't say dire, but things were hard.
Sure, you know? Yeah, a lot of reconstruction needed.
Right. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of money, and I think that this the English opera group that Benjamin Britten and Peter Paris and all of those, their group started, came out of that mentality and that economic situation, and, you know, we don't have a lot of money. We don't have a lot of resources. The country is not in good shape. Let's do something sort of small and interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Peter Paris was the first Albert Herring, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah. Of course, went on to become quite one of the best known of English singers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And largely because of his partnership with Britten. And, you know, Peter Grimes was written for him. Captain Vere in
Billy Budd.
Mm-hmm. The last Aschenbach in Death in Venice. Britten wrote for him.
Artistic collaboration there between the two of them.
And with smaller forces, there's more opportunity for artistic autonomy. I think that was part of the appeal also, and having a smaller orchestra and a smaller theater and having more artistic control and less oversight, which could dictate the path of things philosophically, musically, to do something bold.
And organizationally, administratively, they were not dealing with a huge machine.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Sure, that would make life a little simpler. You'd be able to concentrate more on the music itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's been said that the text is very comic. Does that apply also, do you think, to the music, Kyle? Is it a comic?
I do, and you'll see what I mean in the clips that we brought with us today. But I think it's quite interesting that often he uses existing formal structures like fugues and marches and things like this, and they're used often to parody the buttoned-up stiffness of small-town culture. A big part of this opera, I'd say a major theme, is the theme of oppression and escaping from oppression. So it's funny because he's presenting the hypocrisy of many of the characters within this small town. But I think part of what makes the music exceptional and also the theme exceptional and why it has stood the test of time and become more popular as the years have gone on is that there's a kind of universality to to this message, this sure. escaping from oppression, escaping from the judgments of others, mm-hmm. Whether it is possible to live life on your own terms. And that's really the question that Albert is confronted with. And so it's a comedy, and the music is very funny and often very lighthearted and charming. But especially in the third act, there's a threnody, which is a kind of passacaglia style mm-hmm. structure. They sing, "In the midst of life is death, death awaits us one and all. Death attends our smallest step, silent, swift, and merciful."
Comedy.
Comedy. You're a comedy, yeah. clearly.
And that is a very serious moment where they think Albert is dead. And to some extent, they are the cause of his disappearance, at
sure,
least.
Sure, sure.
And that lends this comic opera a significant gravity that makes it sort of exist in both spheres, both comic and tragic. And it's very exceptional that it can do both of those things.
I think you would find that with a lot of the great comedy. Look at, you know, Tartuffe or some of the Shakespeare comedies, and I think they exhibit similar features, mm-hmm. characteristics.
Mm-hmm. As well as that incongruity, of course, is mm-hmm. the essence yeah. of comedy. Mm-hmm. Before we hear a little bit of Albert Herring, do you want to just, I think the premise for the opera, the plot, if you will, is quite simple.
Yeah.
It's almost a gimmick.
Sure. You want to explain it, David?
Sure. Yeah. We're in a small provincial town in England, and every year they have a May Day feast where they crown a young woman the Queen of the May because she is, in quotes, virtuous.
Right.
The committee to select such a woman meets, and they can't find any young girls who are virtuous in town. It's a huge scandal, and the superintendent of police comes up with an idea of, well, let's use a boy. I know this kid, Albert Herring, he's kind of nerdy. He works in his mother's greengrocer, and I'm sure he's virtuous. He hasn't had any kind of contact with the opposite sex, and I can't imagine that he would drink alcohol. So to Albert's protestations to his mother, they crown him King of the May. He's completely embarrassed, humiliated by the whole thing. His contemporaries spike his drink, which will enable him to go out on a bender. They think he's dead. He comes back and tells them all off.
Yeah, I don't think that's telling too much. And what are we going to hear in this first expert?
So this is the moment, as David was just saying, after Albert has been suggested and the leader of this small town committee, Lady Billows, is outraged. And so she needs some convincing. That we can, in fact, use a man, Albert. And so the vicar, who is part of this group, sings a lovely tune, really the most beautiful music in the opera, perhaps overall, but certainly up to this point, singing about Albert's virtue. And the thing about this is that everyone chimes in, and they seem to be buttressing this point that, yes, we can go with Albert as King of the May. And they're singing about his virtue according to their rules. And this is a real sleight of hand by Britain, and why this is such an interesting clip, because the music is transcendently beautiful, gorgeous, lyrical, melodic. But they're singing about his virtue according to their rules, whereas Britain is telling us about Albert's intrinsic virtue, which already exists because of who he is. He doesn't need to be virtuous on their rules. He already has it. And he kind of figures that out by the end. But the beauty of this music exists on two levels, because they're singing about virtue, but not the kind of virtue that really matters. And Britain is aware of the difference, and he shows it to us.
From the opera, Albert Herring.
Virtue, says Holy Writ, is virtue. Grace abounding.
Yes, I think you'd have to agree that's got a comic effect to it, both in the lyrics and in the music. Albert
Absolutely.
Herring, some things going on there in the, what shall we say, catalog of alleged virtues of the May King in that 1947 opera by Benjamin Britten. And that is going to be performed this coming Friday, isn't it? 24th.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
October 24th, 26th, and 28th, Music Hall. It's Albert Herring And with me today are the director, David Ronas, and Kyle Knox, who's the graduate assistant. It's graduate assistant conductor, not graduate assistant conductor.
Yes. I don't understand the difference.
You're the conductor.
I'm the conductor of this opera,
you are the conductor,
but that is my position at the university.
Whatever exactly
yeah, that's
you
right.
are. That's right. And we will have that quiz question at about 12:30 or so. We're going to hear more from Albert Herring, though. And is there anything in particular that made you decide to produce this opera this time?
Oh, yeah. It's the right opera educationally for the UW students. We could cast it with UW students. It teaches them all kinds of musical and dramatic things just to work on this piece. Challenges them. It uses the right amount of forces instrumentally and vocally.
You don't have to worry about the language too much. I mean,
right.
You know, that kind of takes off the table.
I mean, yeah, I mean, we do things in foreign language all the time, but actually it's more challenging in many ways because we're not using super titles.
Really? Why? I mean, why is it more challenging not to have them?
Because
you
the performers
have to, be
have to really
clear.
Make themselves understood, which
point.
Is very challenging for our students, mm-hmm. and we are, we're challenging them with yeah. it, and they are rising to the challenge, but it's quite difficult, actually.
What do we have in this other excerpt?
This is the moment in this Act 2, Scene 2. Right after Albert's drink has been spiked, he returns home by himself, and he confronts his inner demons, as it were. He eavesdrops on Sid and Nancy having an amorous tryst outside, which sets him off to rail against himself and
his situation,
yeah. Mm-hmm. But alcohol enables him to summon the chutzpah to take a chance, to really go there, and he decides to let fate decide whether he's going to act on all of this or not. And he flips a coin, and he uncovers the flipped coin, and it's heads, which means he's going to go do it. And his fate is decided, and he goes out into the night after this.
Why does this seem particularly well-suited to college audience?
Oh.
Something about drinking and, you know.
Becoming
of age, yeah.
Becoming your own person, and sure.
Yeah, it's an incredibly well-written scene and with so much in it. And Albert's angst is so well-written mm-hmm. musically.
I mean, for all of the comedy and parody, which is not caricature, but it has a lightness, and the characters are very well defined in this way. For all of that, there's, I think, incredible realism in this scene, in Albert's scenes.
Oh, absolutely.
When he's alone, there is, like I was saying, a relatability and a dimension to his struggle that feels relatable and feels true. It feels like realism to me when I see it.
Yeah.
Here we go, from Albert Herring. So do you have to cast somebody who can whistle to get to pull that part off?
No, you don't.
No? People just can whistle? I mean, I don't think it's that easy.
There are theatrical techniques to make that happen if someone can't.
Really?
And some of the whistling is off stage, so we can recruit the virtuoso whistlers from the ensemble who aren't used on stage.
Uh-huh.
We happen to have whistlers, but mm-hmm. you don't have to have them.
Well, good. That'll be something else to look forward to in these upcoming performances of Benjamin Britten's 1947 comic chamber opera, Albert Herring, which the University Opera and University Opera Orchestra are putting on, and of course it will be sung in English, being an English opera. The director is David Ronas, and Kyle Cox is the graduate assistant conductor, both of whom have been with me this half hour to provide some insights into this fascinating bit of opera, 20th century opera, Albert Herring. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.